Hello and welcome to another episode of Shipping and Handling. I'm Jennifer Edden from the Donald Moss Literary Agency.
And I'm Bridget Smith from Dunham Literary.
Thanks for joining us for another week of fun book talk.
Yay!
So we have a couple of exciting announcements,
yes.
Most of which you have probably already seen all over Twitter, but since this is our podcast, we get to say again.
I'm incapable of not talking about this. I'm so excited about it.
Well, why don't you go first with your big news?
Well, I just sold a debut YA contemporary for Emma Mills titled First and Down, and it's so funny, and it's so delightful, and I've been talking about it obliquely over the last bunch of episodes, because there's so much that I really admire and enjoy about it, and so I was like, well, this client of mine did this really great thing in this manuscript, and I can't tell you any more than that. So now when I want to talk about it, I just can. It's great.
You have a title and everything.
Yeah.
And it's being published by
Henry Holt, which is an imprint of Macmillan.
Nice.
And I'm very excited for her.
Nice.
Yay.
Yep.
She's also a vlogger, and we can put a link to her channel in the links.
The links.
And so she's really not the most prolific vlogger, but incredibly charming and very funny. And basically, if you like her videos, you will like her manuscript. So.
I sent my dad the one. She has this really funny video about when she didn't get into medical school.
Yeah.
And it's just the most, adorable. It's just so great.
Seriously, you watch one video
and then you've 5 hours later,
you've accidentally watched all of them and you want to be best friends with her.
Exactly. So, exactly.
Yeah. And I'm so excited about it and so proud to have worked on this manuscript.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Well, I had my own exciting news. I was able to announce last week that my client Anna Szabo's new contemporary romance will be published by Penguin, Berkeley Intermix.
Nice.
Very excited.
Yeah.
Anna actually is her pseudonym. She writes under a different name as well. She writes fantasy.
Okay.
So she's one of those hybrid authors we talked about who has a lot of different things going with several different publishers. And I'm so excited to be working on this book. It's a MM, they call it, which feels like a very awkward MM, sounds like a candy, but it's gay romance about a guy who accidentally sleeps with his boss.
Whoops.
Not like tripped and fall on his dick or anything, but like, you know, mistaken
Grey's
identities.
Anatomy style?
Exactly.
That's a reference from 2009.
Oh, yeah. 2009? 2009.
Nope.
We have to go back a little further than that.
2005. Sorry. God.
Just let me get out my cane and my and my Ovaltine.
Oh dear. Yeah, that's a 10-year-old reference right there.
Mm-hmm.
I am hip and with it.
Well, I just started watching Veronica Mars, so you know.
I watched the first few episodes and then it came down off the streaming site and I was sad.
It's on Amazon Prime.
I don't have Amazon Prime.
Sign up for it for a month. Watch a
book. You have to pay for it all up front.
No, you don't.
Oh, you can do the free month, free trial.
And then you cancel it.
Yeah.
Like I did. Well, congratulations to us. Cheers.
Ooh, wheeling and dealing. Shipping and handling.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be the episode title, right?
Yes.
We can never come up with episode titles when we need them, but I always come up with these two-word phrases that we have never been able to figure out what to talk about to go along with them.
Yeah. So you've been saving wheeling and dealing for a while. That's been in your pocket for a while.
Actually, not that one. That's but it's
Bridget
good
has a diary at home with all these two-word. She's like, someday I will convince
something
Jen to let me do
something.
This. Well, beyond our, triumphant entry into Publisher's Marketplace,
yes.
There's other stuff we wanted to talk about this week.
Yes, which is how we got there.
Exactly.
Because this is something that every agent and every author and every editor is always thinking about, and that is revision. The marketplace is so competitive now that you need to have a very finely honed manuscript before it can even sell and then be revised even further. So, Jen and I have both worked on revisions with all of our clients. And so we have some thoughts on them. I actually just read 3 client revisions in a row. So
yeah, I'm not even done with I have January, February has been sort of the read all the things, do all the edits month. Mostly because they sort of piled up at the end of last year and I never sort of got out from under them, but but yeah, it's you know, with Anna, you know, we went through a couple of revisions and she had originally envisioned it as sort of a novella, and then it sort of I sort of pushed and pushed and pushed until it became a novel. but something that I go through, I think, with every single one of my clients is that question of what is great about this book and how can we bring those things out more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's never about changing it to fit the market.
No.
It's never about changing it, or it's hopefully it shouldn't be like this, and it shouldn't ever be about sort of like fitting it into a category.
Though sometimes that can make a book stronger as well as more saleable.
Yeah, if it can't decide whether it's YA or adult, it's, you know, pushing it more in one direction is one direction is good. But did you do a lot of revisions with the? I just keep referring to her in my brain as Elmify, and I just can't believe she's going to have, like, a real name on her cover.
I know.
She's got a social security number? What? She's only got one name.
She can't possibly. Yeah. We did a couple of rounds. It came to me with this incredibly strong voice, and that was exactly what I was looking for. It's what I'm always looking for, is this narrator that leaps off the page. And this narrator is definitely flawed, and it's very easy to pick out her flaws, but she's so lovable, and I just, like, I love her like an actual friend, someone who I can be like, okay, you're doing that again, and it's annoying, but I still want you around all the time anyway. But there were certain elements that I felt needed to be strengthened. When it came to me, it was mostly about this character's relationships with various boys in her life. Whether it's romantic or friendly or familial, it was various different relationships. And I said, can we look at some of her relationships with the girls, too? Because part of the reason that a lot of these relationships are sort of messed up or go through struggles is because she has no girlfriends. And so I wanted her to sort of come to that realization and figure out how we could do that. And Emma read this and listened to my suggestions and said, you know, that's not a bad idea. I can do that. And she came back and she didn't, like, added a whole nother subplot. And I was like, great. Well done.
Fabulous. Thanks.
Yeah.
And it's funny, even now, you know, we can't really sort of go into, you know, specifics about, you know, what happens and stuff. But with Anna's, it was just sort of like, what motivates these two characters and what is it that they want from this situation that they're not getting, and how is this burgeoning love, you know, getting in the way of them getting what they want? Which is, you know, I feel like I have the same conversation with all of my clients about all of their books, no
really?
Matter if it's sci-fi or fantasy or you know, Godot. I'm like, what do they want? What do they want?
Yeah.
It's either that or, but how did they feel? I've, like, scribbled all over them.
Yeah, that too.
But how do they feel? But yeah, and, you know, I've asked clients to go through revisions before I've signed them.
I've done that too.
I'm probably going to be asking some people to do that very soon, but, you know, it's tough. It's tough.
Yeah.
It's hard out there.
I often like to ask prospective clients to do a revision before I sign them so that I can see how in depth they go with the revisions, if they really take the suggestions that I had for them and dive into the manuscript with these thoughts.
Yeah.
Because I don't want you to just change a couple of sentences and then send it back to me. If I think that the manuscript needs more work, I'd rather know that whether or not you're capable of doing those revisions now, rather than struggling and struggling and struggling for months.
Well, and one of the other things that I sort of sometimes run into, or not really run into, but okay, run into, sort of in the bowels of the internet is, you know, these sort of, you know, if you want someone, people who think that asking an author to do revisions before you sign them is sort of somehow mean. Okay. Or somehow, you know, sort of arbitrary and like, we're a power-hungry gatekeeper. I was having a complete sidebar yesterday. Maggie Stiefvater wrote a blog post about why she likes being traditionally published.
I saw that.
And I said something about how I was really disappointed that no one like wandered around and asked me if I was the keeper. And she said, well, I'm the key master. So, and I was like, so that means that I'm Sigourney Weaver. Yes. I mean, obviously I'm not Sigourney Weaver, but still like my mental image of myself is now Sigourney Weaver.
Fair enough.
With that hair and the orange dress. Anyway, complete sidebar.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that when agents don't necessarily want to make you do revisions before signing you, because it might mean that they do a bunch of work for you and then they don't wind up signing the manuscript or getting paid for it. So the only reason an agent would do that much work without, like, basically on spec is because they really believe you can do this and really want you to be able to do this.
Yeah. And the only reason that I sort of ask people is because I've been burned before, you know, and also, you know, there is also the reality that someone else may swoop in and say, you know, I like this as it is, and I'm going to take a chance on it as it is. True. And, you know, it's the author's prerogative to choose who they want to go with.
Yeah.
You know, and if someone doesn't like my feedback, that's legit. Like, yeah, that's 100% legit. Fair. Not thinking that I have any idea what I'm talking about.
If you don't have the same vision for the manuscript, then you're probably not the right agent for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that either of you are wrong. It's just you're seeing two different books.
I see your true colors. That's why I love you. Yeah, there is sort of an element of, like, I see the book this book can become.
Yeah.
But then, you know, it's easy to get into that mindset of every book can, like, become a beautiful flower. And sometimes that's not true.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's totally not true. But,
Sometimes authors who can become beautiful flowers write books that cannot.
You wrote a beautiful flower, and now you must bloom! I forget what that's from, but
I have no idea.
Oh my god, I'm gonna remember it, like, in the middle of the night.
You're just a font of references tonight.
Of 100% useless knowledge is the phrase you're searching for, but
Oh, I'm the one who made the Grey's Anatomy reference.
Except that was, like, the most popular TV show of all time, and it's still on the air.
It's true. It's not useless.
Oh, I know what it's from. Okay, never mind. Okay. It's from an episode of Black Books. The one where Manny accidentally joins a, like, beard pornography ring. Never mind.
I've seen all of those episodes, and yet whenever people mention them, I can never remember them. Like, I know I saw that.
It was the first season.
Okay.
It's called Manny, he's leaving home, and he decides to run away because Bernard is being too mean to him. And so he writes him a note. And then he sort of gets rescued by this semi-sketchy dude that he meets, like, out front of a bus station. Okay. And the guy's like, may I feel your beard? And he ends up taking pictures of him for this, like, Japanese beard fetish.
Oh, I do remember that one. Okay.
I grow you like a flower, and now you must bloom! Yeah. I spent a lot of time watching TV. Actually, that was during the summer between my junior and senior years in college. I worked on campus at college, and I was doing data entry, and it was so boring. So I'd always have something going on, like another window, like, oh my god, this is so boring.
I have never been able to do that. I can only focus on, like, I mean, music helps me concentrate on the thing that I'm working on, but anything with visuals, I can't keep my eyes focused on the task.
Well, it can't ever be something that I've, well, with data entry, it's different because, like,
yeah,
you know, but yeah. I mean, if I'm reading, like, if I'm just sort of, like, doing something that doesn't really need a lot of concentration, I can watch something that I've already seen, and it's almost like I'm listening to it in the background.
Okay.
But, I suppose. I've been listening to a lot of drone metal lately. There's this French band called Year of No Light that's amazing. But, yeah. I'll talking about revisions. Yeah, sorry. I got us, like, way off track. Sometimes you have to revise.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't, you know?
Yeah. You usually have to do some revising, but... And, you know, sometimes I get things where I'm like, this book is 95% perfect, but that last 5%, can we just polish that a little bit.
I like giving those notes. Like, this is so great, except just it's a little.
This like scene in the middle here. Can we just make that better? Okay, we're good.
Yeah.
I one of the manuscripts that I recently read, and I need to reread a chunk of it again just to make sure that my first impression was correct. But like the first three quarters of this manuscript, I was like, I have no notes. It's great. The climax is not tense enough. So we need to fix that.
That's what she said. Sorry.
Yeah, every time I write an editorial letter, I'm like, can we make the climax stronger? I'm like, this is so awkward.
Oh my god, I feel like we need that on a t-shirt. Anyone wants to design shipping and handling t-shirts for us? Can you make the climax stronger? Shipping and handling.
Oh, God.
They say you have to put out what you want into the universe, and that the universe will bring it to you.
I'm sure we can always put it on, what's that website?
Zazzle.
Yes. That is, in fact, what I was thinking of.
Okay, good. I was just like, did I just say a nonsense word? It's a real silly episode tonight, folks.
Yeah.
But I think, I'm trying to remember, I don't remember how long... I probably have it in my notes somewhere, but I don't remember how long, you know, we worked on this book before we went on submission.
Okay.
It sold fairly quickly, but I'm really excited about it.
Good.
It's such a good story. It's like, such great sex.
No need to make the climax stronger.
Oh, the climax is plenty strong, let me tell you. And of course, like, I call my mom and I was like, Mom, I sold a book. And she's like, what is it, honey? And I was like...
Oh.
It's gay romance. And she's like, great. And I was like, you'll never read it, will you? And she's like, probably not.
It's like, okay, fair enough.
That's okay. You know, some people, she doesn't read any romance. Like, she doesn't think that it's, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. When I was a teenager, I read a lot of, like, still YA and children's books and that sort of thing. It wasn't, because YA wasn't really as big when I was a teenager. It was pre-Twilight.
Oh, those halcyon days. Actually, they weren't really halcyon days, but, you know.
No, yeah. Well, but it meant that there was, like, YA was not the big section in Barnes & Noble that it is now. Mm-hmm. It was sort of just, like, older juvenile books. And so I still read a lot of books from there. And my mom was like, I think you should read more grown-up books. Like, you should read more... books that are challenging. And I was like, I know that I can, but these are fun. I really like these. These speak to my soul. And so my mom was always telling, like, trying to encourage me to read more adult books. And now, in retrospect, we're both like, yeah, I guess that was okay.
Yeah.
That was market research.
That was preparation. You got your 10,000 hours in, is what you did.
Yeah, I did. And so, of course, this book that I've just sold is YA, but my mom is very excited about it. She loves the videos as well, and so she's can't wait to read this book.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of YA, I read a really interesting article that I sort of was, like, kind of getting mad at, because I feel like we're... Well, first of all, the article was on this website I love called The Daily Dot, which is a sort of fandom...
Okay.
oriented website that have mostly longer pieces. But it was basically an article about sort of this John Green backlash, like a backlash against John Green, and sort of like, why does he have to be sort of the anointed savior of YA, and why is it this dude and stuff like that. And it sort of got me thinking, like I've wanted really badly to dislike him. Like I was sort of like,
yeah,
I'm gonna give you the side eye, but like I watched a bunch of the videos, and I was like, you're totally charming.
He's incredibly likable.
Incredibly likable. And I feel like people sort of read stuff into, like, the stuff he says, like, way more than is merited.
Yeah.
But I don't know where I was going with that, but I was just like, oh, come on.
I sort of straddle the line on this issue, because I sort of think it's ridiculous that he is heralded as the savior of YA. And I'm like, no, he's just a really good YA author who knows how to, like, appeal to teenagers. Which is great. That's wonderful. But that doesn't make him the savior of a category of books that did not actually need saving.
Yeah.
And is, in fact, thriving quite well. But also, I do think that he's a great author, and he does what he does very, very well. There's a reason why basically the New York Times bestseller list is his list of books.
Yeah. I mean, I forget who I was telling you that, you know, I was sort of like, you're not going to make me cry, Fault in Our Stars. You can't do it. I'm a hardened...
I refuse.
I harden my heart against you. like the Pharaoh. But, no, I cried like a tiny child on the subway. Just, like, mascara all over my book. Just like, damn you, John Green. Damn you. Uh-huh. But, well, should we move into some questions?
I know we've got some.
Bridget has a social engagement tonight, so she's got... She's gonna leave, but,
You make it sound so much more interesting than it is.
Well, my social engagement is with my couch, so... <You know. laughs> Oh, my client raises a wine glass to us, the one whose book I just sold. So cheers. Thank you! Cheers! Okay, Alexa Dunn asks, I'd love to hear about what it's like for you as agents when you're on sub with client work. Average wait times, etc. Average wait times! I mean, it takes as long as it takes.
Yeah. Sometimes it, like, okay, to be perfectly honest, Emma's book sold in 2 weeks. But that was because I called up all the editors and I said, this is a really great book. Also, go look at her YouTube videos. And so one of the editors that I spoke to immediately looked at her YouTube videos. And so by the time I actually pressed send on the email containing the manuscript 10 minutes later, she was like, I already love her. I want to like this book. And so that worked out. That's extraordinary. It's never that quick. Sometimes you send things out on submission for a year and then you get a revision request from an editor.
Sometimes it's out for longer than a year.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is that, you know, the best thing that an author can do during the process is two things. Make your expectations about what you want from your agent clear.
Mm-hmm.
Like how often you want to hear.
Yes.
How often you want to know what editors are saying. I have one client who I realized I hadn't talked to her in a while because she's sort of my least attention seeking client. She literally, like, she's like, I've got shit to do, like, I'm not gonna call you. Nice. And so I was like, well, let's have a call and catch up, and she's like, eh, that's all right.
I'm okay.
So, like, she made her expectations very clear, and, you know, you have to sort of let your agent know what you expect and then sort of don't sit on your laurels.
No, write the next book.
Yeah.
And for another thing, that's a really great distraction from waiting.
Worry about a problem that you can actually do something about.
Yes.
But it is incredibly frustrating. I mean, it's frustrating for us, and I think that frustration gets compounded, like, the further out you go.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, if it's frustrating for me, and I, like, imagine what it's like for my poor fucking client who, like, hasn't heard in, like, forever.
Yeah. I can email the editor to check in, and that's a thing that I can do to take initiative.
Yeah.
The author can't do that.
Yeah. Please don't do that.
No.
Don't.
God, no.
No.
No, no, no.
No, no.
That is a really great way to get
and
a rejection.
And, like, you know, I know that all my clients are really smart people, but whenever I go out on submission with something, I'm like, listen, I know that you're going to feel like you're totally being, like, talked down to, but don't contact the editors. Don't tweet at them.
Nope.
Don't email them. Don't send them flowers. Like, just no. You do not say anything to them. Because you hear these horror stories about, like...
Mm.
Like, oh, you know, an agent reached, or an author reached directly out to an editor, and, like,
no.
There's no faster way to kill a submission. but yeah, there is no average wait time. I sold Anna's in about 2 weeks.
Oh, nice.
As well.
Cool.
And I had a couple different authors, but,
yeah.
You know, it was nice.
Yeah.
It was a nice feeling. I was like, yes.
After ones that have taken months or years and gone nowhere.
Well, and it also depends on the genre, because you know, I feel like romance editors might be a little bit quicker. I mean, the SFF editors have a sort of historic reputation for being slow as molasses, which is really unfortunate. But
it's weird. SFF is a weird group of people in that they
bless all our hearts.
We're all very sort of forward-looking, but also very much sort of stuck in the past and slow. And
Well, it also, I think, has to do with, you know, for whatever reason, romance readers have really embraced, like, the speed of ebooks.
Oh, yes.
And so I feel like, as a consequence, romance imprints have sort of risen to meet that demand, which means that they have an actual need for more content. Mm-hmm. And of course, this, you know, it depends on what you're writing. Like, you know, not every genre of romance is going to be in demand all the time from the major publishers. But I think SFF people have been a little bit slower to embrace that. Mm-hmm. And so as a consequence, it's like a little... And it's also a smaller genre. So, like, I don't know.
I also think that part of it is that romance novels are generally designed to be fairly short, fairly quick reads, whereas SFF is more likely to be tomes.
Yes.
So you can you don't
how many
have
hundred
to be
thousand
as quick.
Words is this? Fuck.
Okay.
Alrighty. So, Justin from I think he's from the Staffers Book Review. Says, talk to me about highlighters. Are you yellow or orange people?
Blue.
Bridget's a rule breaker. I use whatever is closest to hand, which right now is yellow. But I also said that I'm a fountain pen woman, so yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Well, I have a yellow one that just sits on my desk, but I also have a pack of multicolored ones. What I like to do is when I'm revising is I pick a different color or working on edits. I pick a different color for each theme in the manuscript.
Oh.
And then you can, like, highlight it and see. This helps actually a lot if you go through... This is a suggestion from Cheryl Klein, who's an editor at Scholastic. And she has written a book about revising called Second Sight. Revision. And it's a really great book, especially for children's books, like picture books through YA, just... Absolutely fantastic, really on point. But one of the things she suggests is going through and writing down what every scene is in the manuscript. This happens in this scene, and like on what page number. And then if you go through and you highlight the various threads of the narrative and the themes that you want to come out, you can see which are lacking in which points and which are too heavily... situated in others, and you can rearrange scenes. You can
That's
say we
so
need
interesting.
More of this here.
That's so interesting.
And I found it incredibly helpful.
Well, do you print out your manuscripts every time when you're revising, when you're doing edits?
Not every time. Sometimes. Actually, a lot of it depends on how long the manuscript is.
Yeah. Well, I always do double-sided if I print, but I think the other thing that I do, it depends on the manuscript, but it also depends on sort of what stage of editing I'm in and also like what kind of thing I think it needs.
Yeah.
Like I've done some really intense revisions with people and I have highlighted the shit out of everything.
Yeah.
I've used like every single highlight color that Microsoft Word has to offer. But at the end of the day, I also like usually write like a big email sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like these are the things.
Absolutely.
These are the things I think you should look at.
Yeah. And it's nice because the big email is where you can talk about themes and character motivations and that sort of thing, and like the overarching
how do they feel, what do you want. Okay, so Tracy Townsend, the Storymatic, says, like the last eps on getting through doldrums, thanks. Hey. How about controlling chaos when things are lively? I think
just ride it.
Just ride it. Just be you know, be happy and excited that things are exciting.
Yeah.
And, you know, keep track of where things are. Like, stay organized, but not so organized that it makes you crazy.
Yeah. Just as organized as you need.
Just as organized as you need to
that's
be.
That's sort of how I survive BEA.
Oh, God. I survive BEA with lots of alcohol. Let's be real.
That, too.
A cup of coffee welded to each hand. And
yep.
Pour Bailey's in it at night, you know?
Yeah, like, basically, the way I get through BEA is the same way that I got through all of the crazy times. Is lots of lists, a few specific things that need to get done, and a lot of flexibility on the others, and lots of chemical stimulants.
But not drugs.
No, just coffee.
Drugs are bad. Amy C., Sally Bell 75, says, I'd like to hear more about rejection letters, the anatomy of a rejection, form versus personal, etc.
Hmm. Oh, what a fun, cheerful topic.
Yeah.
Everyone hates rejection letters. We hate writing them.
We really hate writing them.
Yeah.
We hate sending them.
Yeah.
Because, I haven't written a fucking novel.
No.
I've read a lot, but I haven't written one, and so... You know, anyone who has written a book, you know, high fucking five to you, because you're doing awesome.
Yep.
Same time.
I can't represent everything.
Yeah.
And I don't want to represent everything. But, yeah, basically, all I can say is just don't read too much into the rejection. Take it exactly at face value. Because what they're presenting to you... is what they want you to read into it. I've sometimes had people respond to rejections where they're basically analyzing my word choice for completely form rejection. They're like, what did you mean by this? And I'm like, you get the same as everyone else, buddy. That didn't mean anything.
The only time where you should absolutely read something into my rejections is if I have given you the dear author, because I almost never do the dear author. Unless you have sent me an incomplete query or you have called me Judden. I swear to God, one of these days, I'm just going to start replying with the link to that song, because that's not my fucking name.
This is my favorite thing in the world.
I don't know why you think it's so hilarious, but I hate it so much.
I totally
hate
it so much.
I honestly literally don't even look at the query. I'm just like, my name isn't fucking Judden.
Like, I find it so hilarious because I can't believe that many people think your name is Judden.
It happens so much more often. Let me just go. I'm just going to take a little look at my queries right now. I won't write it.
I can't believe that many people think that. Like, really?
It's so frustrating because it's not, like, yes, my email address is Judden, but my name on the website is Jennifer Udden. And so by the laws of how to address a fucking email, you should say, Dear Jennifer. I mean, if you want to be, like, fancy, you can say, Dear Miss Udden, but I'm like, I don't give a shit. I'm not a teacher. Like, you know, don't call me fucking Judden. Oh my God!
This is also how I feel when people call me Brenda. So I totally get it.
I mean,
my thing with Brenda is one, my name everywhere is Bridget. So why are you calling me Brita?
Mrs. Udden, not married.
Oh yeah, I get Mrs. Smith a lot too. I'm like, yeah, I have never been Mrs. Smith and will never be Mrs. Smith unless I marry a man named Smith, which is not actually unlikely given the commonality.
Dear Miss Judden. Dear Miss Judden.
At least that's better than Judden Udden.
Oh my God, nothing will ever... nothing will ever beat Judden Udden. Like...
Do you not see the words that you are typing?
I mean, it's just like...
Oh,
here,
God.
Actually, I can do.
Yeah, my thing with Brenda is that you shouldn't be calling me Brita anyway. That's a nickname. Like, spell it correctly. Or when people write to my boss and call her Miss Durham, like, you got Dunham in the email address. How did you not translate that into the actual name?
If you receive a dear author from me, it's not because I'm actually, like, at a level where I can give, like, I don't have I have a lot of queries, but, like, not so many that I can't, like,
yeah,
you know, give something a little personal, but, like, I only ever do the dear author if it's something that, like, just makes me want to set something on fire.
Or, and this has happened more than you would actually think likely, or if there's nowhere in the email that indicates the author's name. That
yes.
happens.
Yes.
Yeah.
Put your name in the
email. Right?
It's not that hard.
Like, sign the email.
Like, a query letter is a letter. Dear so-and-so.
Yeah.
Body of email.
From
all best. Sincerely. Name. Like. Not that hard.
And like, if it, even if the person doesn't include it in the body of their email, I can sometimes parse it from the email address.
Unless it's something like sometimes I get people, like, this is, someone was saying that, like, I think it was Brooks Sherman was tweeting last week or earlier this week that, you know, when you're picking an email address, be sure that it's not something that you would, you know, in 40 years really regret. I wish I could, I'm not going to say it on the internet, but, or on the podcast, but I will tell you the best one I ever received, and it wasn't in this job, it was my previous job, but, like, you know, you've got to have something that you can,
yeah,
because if I have to, like, parse it out from, or when someone, one time someone signed this, I also run into this with pseudonyms, like, people who are, like, planning on writing under a pseudonym, but their email address is still from, like, their real name.
Okay.
And one time I sent a pass to someone, I said, dear so-and-so, and I used the name they had given in the body of the email, they're like, that's not my name, that's just my pseudonym. I'm like, well, if you just signed your pseudonym,
the name you want,
I'm gonna use the name that you give me, like,
yeah. I would assume that the name in the body of the email was the actual name and the name in the email address was the pseudonym.
Didn't you have a situation where someone sent you a query under two different names?
Like a
man and a woman, and he was trying to trick. Trying to trick you.
That was the weirdest thing.
Trying to be catfished in like representation.
I got a query for a manuscript that I thought sounded intriguing, and so I requested it. And I just, it was sort of too stylized for my taste. And at this point, the manuscript was, or the person I was communicating with, had a female name, and I was like, it's just not working for me. I feel too disconnected from it. I don't, like, I got to a point where I was like, I just don't want to read this anymore. And so I stopped. But then, like, a couple months later, I got a query completely revised, written in a different way, but clearly for the same book, from someone writing under a male name who did not mention that I had previously.
And, like, when you got the manuscript, you were like, this is clearly the same book.
No, I got the query, and I said, this is the same book. This is the book that I have already seen. And I was like, are you trying to trick me? Is this a social experiment? Are you trying to figure out if I'll prefer it by a male author rather than a female author? Because I promise you I will not.
Yeah.
Historically, I've read about 90% women to about 10% men, so...
Yeah.
This is not... I was like, I don't even know what is going on here, but I've already rejected this manuscript, so they're just getting a form rejection to this query.
Dear author, you tried to pull one over on me. I think I am literally going to start replying to that with, that's not my name, but, you know, it's just so frustrating, because I'm like, if my mama had wanted to call me Judden, she would have.
And then you would actually be Judd Nutton.
And I would have tried to get myself legally emancipated. But,
and I think everyone would have supported you in that.
Okay, so I think that's it for our questions. So, Bridget, what are you reading this week?
I am currently reading The Poisonwood Bible by Barbara Kingsolver. Oh,
is that good?
It is.
I've never read any Barbara Kingsolver.
This is something I can talk about because I've been wondering whether or not to tweet this. But I was first introduced to her in ninth grade when we read The Bean Trees in English class. And I was absolutely enchanted by this book. I felt elevated by this book. And I loved it. It was one of my favorite books we read that year. And so after we finished it, I went to go talk to my English teacher and I was like, I really love this book. Thank you so much for assigning it. And he was like, really? Because I hated it. I was like, why? And he's like, what does it teach you except to hate men? And like,
and then you stabbed him.
I will say this teacher was an extremely supportive teacher who did everything he possibly could to make both his boy students and his girl students feel like they were capable of achieving everything. He was a fantastic English teacher. And in retrospect, I'm like, at the time, I was too confused to respond to that because that was not at all what I had gotten from that. What I had gotten was that you don't need a man rather than all men are terrible. And so as I think about this in retrospect, I'm really shocked that that's what he took from it. And like, that's... I'm...
Well, it's just, you know... Yeah. You know, it's that old argument of, you know, any time... What was the statistic that, you know, any time there are 17% women in a group, men think that they're, that they're a majority?
Yeah.
Like, even one woman in a group of five, men perceive as, like, as like a lot of women.
Yeah.
So...
Oh.
He was just being scared.
Yep. And that makes me sort of sad, but yeah, I found...
Sad for him more than anything else, because like, that's what he takes from, like...
Yeah.
I mean, there are legitimate books where you can take men fucking blow from, you know, as a lesson, but yeah, like,
that there are books where that is the point. But
which, you know, yay.
Yeah.
But,
But that, like, I felt...
Nothing has made me want to put on a t-shirt that says misandry more than this, like, SFWA debate, but like, that's...
Yeah.
It's a story for another day.
Nope. But yeah, so I just felt so inflated by the Bean Trees that I've held this author in great respect ever since, but I have not read much of her other books, or many of her other books. And so I'm reading the Poisonwood Bible for the first time. I'm only like 15% in, so it's not really... I don't really have a great handle on it yet, but she's such a great writer. Oh my God. Just, she's like, so far in this book, I have seen 5 narrators and each one of them has a completely distinctive voice.
Wow.
Wow. It's, wow. It's, I'm very impressed. And I'm always impressed.
Nice.
But yeah. So, what are you reading?
Well, I finally sort of gotten over my I hate words. Although, can I say that I cannot believe that we got through that whole episode without quoting that song from My Fair Lady? Where she's like, stop talking and kiss me. Kind of, but the whole chorus is words, 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 I'm so sick of words. And I was just like, how did we not come to this?
Oh, God.
But, anyway, so I'm reading, I had got this at Sirens last year, but I hadn't gotten around to reading it, but she just won was one of the Tiptree honorees, Alia Dawn Johnson's Summer Prince.
Yeah,
Oh my God, it's so... This is another one that I
bought and haven't read
Oh
yet.
My God, it's so good. Get on that. It's so amazing. It's a far future Brazil.
Yeah. It's floated, it's like at the top of my pile, so I can read it soon.
But yeah, it's really amazing. The way she uses language is really great, and I just love her so much in general, and
I really, like, as a person, I think she's fantastic.
She's so cool. She's just, I mean, she's just one of those people you're just like, just be my friend, you're so cool. And I just love that her whole, she gave one of the keynote speeches at Sirens, and it was all about sort of, you know... The other and Janelle Monáe is sort of what I took away from it. And then Janelle Monáe was on the Tiptree list. And I was like, yes, thank you.
I saw Alia tweeted about that. And she was like, I'm on this list with Janelle Monáe.
That list is so great. I mean, Sarah McCary's All Our Pretty Songs, I think
another
is what it's
one
called.
That I have and haven't read yet.
God, it's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. She's amazing. She's the rejectionist. And sometimes she tweets at me and I'm just like, you're so cool. You're so cool. Be my friend. So that's what I'm reading right now. Although I have to confess that I think that I reread Fangirl again.
You know.
Because sometimes... I didn't have anything on my phone and I had left my book at home. And Fangirl is always on my phone because why not? And I just reread it because...
That's how I feel about Sorcerer and Cecilia. But yeah, there was also that one, there was like a year where I read Chime 3 times because I just... Like, I would get to this point where I didn't feel like reading anything, and so it's like, this will make me feel better.
Yes, well, that's me and Gaudy Night. I think I got about 75 pages into Gaudy Night before I was like, okay, you need to read something new, and then I was like, okay, Summer Prince, you've been sitting on my shelf.
Yeah.
And she signed it.
Yeah.
Like, you're so great. You're so great.
Yeah, she's one of those people who, like, you walk into her presence... And she's just got this incredibly laid-back charisma.
Yeah.
Where just, like, you gravitate to her.
And she's not, like, sitting back with, like, a, you know, a bong and, like, you know.
No.
Sort of, like, let me talk to you about, you know. No, she's just, like...
She's engaged. She's interested.
But she's not, like, bored or boring. Oh, she's so great. If anyone ever has a chance to meet her, just, like...
Just go.
She's fabulous. Are you going to go to Sirens this year?
I haven't decided yet. That's a long way away. Oh.
October, you should go.
Yeah.
Well, we are reaching the hour at which Bridget has to go.
To depart.
So thank you again for listening, and thanks for all your questions. And you don't always have to ask us about publishing, you know. You can ask us about pretty much anything you want.
Yep.
Although if there are medical questions, I recommend you ask a doctor, because unless it's WebMD, I don't know.
Also, don't ask WebMD. That'll just make you think you have cancer. And most of the time, you probably don't have cancer.
Probably.
If you do have cancer, you should still consult a medical professional.
Yes. Not a publishing podcast.
No.
Well, on that note.
Yay.
Thank you, everyone. And we'll see you in another two weeks. Bye.